Welcome to the Beautifully Bold in Business podcast, where each week, Samantha Johnston, brand developer to the creative and confused, and Nicole Hoagland, small biz and confidence coach to the creatives, are having entrepreneurs share their real stories and tips about their honest and authentic success in business and how they have been able to lead boldly by being themselves. They are creating a movement to show you how to create your own version of success and empower you to be beautifully bold in your business.
Thanks for joining us on the Beautifully Bold in Business podcast. I'm Samantha, and today I'm joined by Samantha Johnston of Flock & Co. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, I am so excited to have you here, although I don't think I get to interact with too many Samanthas on a regular basis.
Right? We get a ton of Megans and no Samanthas, and it bums me out. I'm like, where are you all hiding?
I feel like we're starting to come out of the woodwork.
We are.
We've got Samantha Rogers.
And that's true.
Munoz, and you and me.
We're starting
to get there.
You're special to me. You're my name twin. So
yes.
I was literally talking. I was talking to Danny Fountain on Facebook. We Facebook chat like all the time. And I was telling her like, oh, we're not going to be name twins anymore after I get married. Like, I have to call this off. I can't go through with this.
Just don't change your name. Keep this last name.
Yeah.
I married into mine, so.
Good man.
So we like to get all of the episodes started with asking you about your kickstart moment.
I guess kind of. I have two. One was I went to law school and I graduated from law school and I thought I was going to be a lawyer and I passed the bar exam. And I worked for free for 3 months at a public defender's office, and I could not pay someone to hire me to be a lawyer. And it's funny now because like it was a combination of a lot of things. It was, I didn't have the experience in Chicago. I didn't have the contacts. If we're being honest, I didn't have the grades for a market like this. I didn't have a direction. And I think that's why I went to law school, because you kind of, and it's such a privileged thing to say. It's like, if you don't know what you want, you just keep going to school. And like, to have the advantage of doing that at all, I get is a whole level of things that I am grateful for. But it's also tough, because then I had come to like the end of all of that education expecting that that's what I would be. And then I couldn't. And I could have gone somewhere else and been a lawyer, but I love Chicago and I had never loved like a physical place. Like, I love Chicago. And so I could have gone and been a lawyer somewhere else, or I could be something else in Chicago. And when I put the choice to myself that way, it really wasn't a choice. It was like, well, obviously I'm not leaving. So let's figure out what we can do to make this work. And I think having to explain that decision and justify it to everyone who loved me and people I didn't even know, who think that it's cool to ask questions like that. Like, what are you thinking? It's like, you don't know me. Get out of my face. Like, what do you mean? So having to explain that was kind of a turning point for me, because at first I was really kind of weak about it. I was like, well, I'm not getting a job. Like, I need to do other things. And then eventually it got to the point where I was confident enough in knowing that I didn't want to do it, that I got confident enough to say, I don't want to be a lawyer. I don't want to. I know that I did all, I know I put this work in, and I know that I went through this process, but I don't want to. Like, stop telling me that I should. I don't want to. So I think I look back at that as a really big turning point, because it was so hard and so awful. And I was like, I'm a quitter and I'm stupid and I'm worthless. No one's ever going to hire me. I'm not good at anything else. Like, what am I going to do? And there was nothing, like, I had to get over that by myself. So that was, I mean, not by myself. I had a support system. My fiance is wonderful. My family, it was tough for them, but they're wonderful and they support me. But I had to like get used to justifying my decisions when they weren't what everyone expected. And that wasn't really something I felt like I'd had to do until that point. So that's, I feel like not being a lawyer was like my number one, like, huge moment. And then this sounds really funny to say out loud. My other moment was when my dog died. And I know that sounds really goofy, but it was a dog that I got. I adopted him when I decided I was I studied abroad. It was the first time I'd ever been more than 30 minutes away from home. And I came home and realized that I couldn't stay in that same position. Like, I wasn't the same person I was before I left, so I couldn't stay in the same place. But I was terrified of moving because I'd never lived more than half an hour from home. So I went to a shelter and I adopted the biggest German Shepherd I could find. And for most of like my adult life, he was like my security blanket. Like I moved to a state where I knew 8 people from my study abroad program, went to a brand new college as a junior, lived by myself for the first time ever. And all it was just like me and my dog, like the whole time. And that's like something that I don't think if you're not a dog person, you're like, okay, that's just nuts. But it's very much like a dog people thing, right? And when I moved to Chicago and like had to leave him with my parents, like being able to bring him back to Chicago once we had a house was like a huge accomplishment. It was like, okay, now like I have him back, like things are going the right direction. And so just like all these major milestones in my life, like he was just like a constant thing. So like very much like a grown-up security blanket. And then last spring, he died. And it was, I mean, dogs die, that happens. Like it's not like a massive life thing really, but also made me realize like I don't have a security blanket anymore. Like all these things I want to do, I'm going to do them by myself. And again, it sounds stupid when you're thinking like it's just a dog, but it wasn't. I'm being a weirdo about it.
No, I totally get it. Don't worry. Right? I'm a dog person. So I understand it.
It was like a horrible, terrible growing up moment. I was like, I don't want to. I don't want to have to grow up. But yeah, so I was like working a job and I liked it, but it wasn't what I wanted to do forever. And I was like, okay, so I need to start doing things like being proactive, like find things that I want to do. And so I started a podcast and I wanted to talk to people who were used to be in really traditional fields and then went into really creative fields. So I just out of nowhere, I had no experience. I didn't know what I was doing. I bought a mic on Amazon and I bought a hosting package on Libsyn and I had a girl like design a logo for me. And I started emailing all these people that were way out of my league saying like, hey, I see you used to be an accountant. You used to be a lawyer. You used to do this. Now you do awesome things. Do you want to come talk about it? And I was shocked out of my mind when people started saying yes. It was nuts. I was like, I have outkicked my coverage. Holy crap. What do I do? And it turned into like this project that was very much like people monetize podcasts all the time and make that into a business. But for me, it was like the first creative project that I did by myself. And I was terribly embarrassed to tell anybody about it because I was like, what if it sucks? And it was also talking about a topic that I was still super sensitive about, which was not being a lawyer anymore. So like that kind of whole like process of starting that creative project and having that motivation to start that first project and like put it out there in the world and say, I did that and I'm proud of it. Even if I'm embarrassed that I'm telling you, I'm still proud of it. That was a really big turning point too. So really rambly answer to your question, but those are my big two.
No, I love your answer. I'm curious, how did talking with all of these professionals that had gone from typical, you know, what we all think about when we're younger, you know, like I'm going to be an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor. And I feel like those are like the cliche engineer, doctor, lawyer, accountant jobs.
Yep.
How did talking to them about their journey from those traditional jobs to the creative jobs help you?
It was like therapy. They literally hearing all of these people, and I was still at a point where I didn't know what I wanted to do for sure next, but I was stable enough that like I liked what I was doing enough. But to hear all these people who had literally gone through the exact same thing. They're like, when I left law, like my family was worried about me. My friends were worried about me. No one understood what I was doing. Like it was like this giant uphill battle to make people understand that like there was nothing wrong. I just didn't want to do it anymore. To see that same struggle over and over and be like, I'm not nuts. This is glorious. Like I'm not crazy was so much fun. And it was such like a privilege to have people be that open about it. I'm still shocked when I go back and listen to the episodes because I do because I'm a nerd. Like I'm still shocked at all the things people would say to some, like I've never met them. It was just over the internet and they were so open and so honest about how hard it is and how much it sucks. And it was just amazing to talk about all of those experiences and like see myself in all of those experiences and realize that like I wasn't there yet, but I was going to be fine. Just like they were fine. Just like they found something they love. Like that's coming. You're just not there yet. And that was the best thing that could have happened.
Okay. So I think that this podcast sounds amazing.
Oh, thanks.
So why did you stop doing the podcast and how did you switch from that to what you have now?
Yeah. Basically the same answer. I started the podcast when I was working part-time in a real estate office, and I loved that job. I love that job. I didn't want to be a realtor ever, but I loved it because they were like real estate is an industry that knows what it's like to have everything fall out from underneath you, kind of like law. So like no one in a real estate office questioned why I wasn't a lawyer anymore. They're like, oh, get it. Like, gotcha, kid. I was like, I love this place. So I was working there part-time as I started this podcast, and literally like the week I went live, I got promoted to full time, which was awesome. Like health insurance. But at the same time, I was like, crap, I don't have any time to record anymore. And especially when you're talking about creative people, like it's one of the perks is you don't have to do things, like you can do things whenever you want. So nobody really wanted to schedule podcast interviews for 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night when I was available, because like they'd already been done like for the day. And that's just like not the life they wanted anymore. And that's like the goal is like, you don't have to work when your kids are home or whatever. So like the scheduling wasn't working out. And at the same time, I had had this idea for what is now Flock, a very primitive idea for what is now a much more advanced Flock. It kind of, I put it on, I don't think I quit it because I do want to go back to it. It's something that I don't think is done yet, but I had to pick between the two of them. And I felt like Flock was something I wanted to do. Like it felt bigger than just me talking to people, which is huge. I mean, that's not nothing. These people are incredible who open up and talk about it, but it felt like a project that was much bigger than me. And I wanted to see if it could work. So to do that, I had to kind of put the podcast on hiatus, which it'll come back. It's not dead.
Good. I think it's a fantastic idea, concept. Now I've got to go find it.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to it.
I had a podcast ever.
Oh, yeah. It's been a year since like I've recorded one, so it's pretty far back there.
Yeah. But I mean, hearing that journey, I think, is paramount to those who are trying right now to get out of that 9-to-5 where they feel stuck and defeated and just drained and into that creative realm, and you just don't know how to do it. So hearing other people's journeys can be inspirational and motivational. So it sounds amazing.
Thank you. So
speaking of being inspirational and motivational, where does your inspiration come from?
Honestly, like I never feel more like inspired or ready to like come home and just kick my to-do list ass than after we meet with like other women. Doesn't even have to be doing like things that we do, but every time we get to like go out and have coffee or get on Skype with somebody doing something really awesome. And it's like, I'm like the fakest extrovert in the world. Cause like before I have to get on a call or go to coffee like that, I get like sweaty and nervous, which is hi world. Now, you know, I get sweaty and nervous when I have to talk to new people. That's not awkward. But I like get nervous beforehand and I'm like, I can't do it. I don't want to. I want to stay home in my sweatpants. But then after, like while it's happening, like I am so pumped up by the end of it that like that's what I love. And I love that what we do now connects us with so many people who do so many different things, and hearing their stories and how like everybody has a story. Like nobody's got a straight line for a story. So it's awesome to like hear those things and see yourself and other people and hear what they're doing and realize that everybody's like struggling with something. Nobody, like it's not going perfectly for anybody, no matter how good they make it look. It's never going perfect. There's always something that could be better. So one, to get to connect with those kind of people is so inspiring. And then I've got a little bit of like ADHD when it comes to my projects. So like to have been focused on Flock this whole past year and to have not gotten bored with it yet is just a testament to like fun to get to wake up every day and figure out how to make those people who inspire you, like, how do I make their life better? How do I make their job easier? How do I make it, we compare it to like when we see people online that we love and we see them working together, or like, oh my God, they know each other. It's like breaking the fourth wall in a superhero movie. I get like that same feeling, like either when Deadpool talks to me in a movie, or like when Kevin Spacey is Frank Underwood and he like turns the camera and talks to you and you like you get chills. Like I get that same feeling when two people online I didn't know knew each other when they like do something together. It's like the most fun thing in the world. So that's what like motivates me. That's like the most fun part.
Your superhero comparisons are amazing.
Oh yeah.
Deadpool. Yeah. Oh,
I love right? That. So good.
So I find it amazing. And I have to agree that your inspiration and motivation comes from connecting with people. I recently attended the Savvy Experience and that was
so jealous.
Amazing. Like it's just energizing. You get pumped up. And I have to say, I used to say the same thing about being an extrovert. I was like, these tests, they're lying. Like I have like stage fright and everything else. And I had to break it down and say, being an extrovert doesn't mean you're outgoing. It means you're energized by being around people.
Okay. Well, in that sense, yes.
You can be a shy extrovert and an outgoing introvert. It's a matter of, are you energized when you're with people or when you're alone?
Okay.
Well, then I'm a shy. Energized with people.
Yes, I am shy. So. Oh my God, I had so much FOMO watching everyone's pictures from Savvy. It looked like the best. We had a call with Heather a couple weeks ago, and the first thing we got on Skype, and I was like, Heather, you so much butt. Like, it looked awesome. I couldn't, like, I wanted to be there. Everything was amazing. All these people, like, it was everyone you feel like you know on the internet in one place. I have never, like, cried into my Instagram screen so hard as I did during that.
I have to say, it was pretty awesome.
You don't have to hide it. You don't have to lie for me. I know.
No. So with this, how do you define your success? How have you set your milestones to say, you know, Flock has been successful?
Recently, since we've had users, we've been able to define those numbers and like how many people we can get in. So that's gotten easier. Like defining, like having goals to set and setting those as numbers and then meeting them is crazy and fun. Before that, we've kind of had to define it as like little baby steps. Like 2016 has kind of been a throat punch in a lot of ways, like in family things and professional things kind of all getting jumbled around. And so like sometimes a really big milestone is like, I did two things today. Like I did two tiny things on my to-do list, but they're done and they're finally gone. So a lot of defining, at least for me, like our success and how it's going has been like, what have I accomplished? Like, have things gotten done? And am I still like eating and showering and being a human being? Because sometimes it's just hard. And there have been so many things that have happened this year that I can't believe that like we're still trucking along, but it's sometimes just like, hey, at the end of the day, we still exist. That's good. Like it's still going and we're still improving. And that's been kind of the best measure before we had numbers to go on. So I have like my big, like my pipe dream, and it's not going to sound like a huge pipe dream to other people, which is why it's funny. It's like my pipe dream is like, I will know we've made it when we see like two people like post like a selfie or something on Instagram. They're like, we met because of Flock and we would never have met otherwise. And like, this is my new like business best friend. And the day that happens, you can just like put me in the ground. I'm done. I'm happy. Like that's my big, then I'll know we've made it. So
I love that pipe dream. Nicole and I, co-host, we actually met because of an app.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, we're in like five or six groups together.
Yeah.
We never interacted in the groups, like had occasionally seen each other post. So our names kind of looked familiar, but mm-hmm. we didn't really recognize from where. And somebody in one of the groups had mentioned an app called Collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And we both went to see what it was about and popped up in each other's feed. It's like Tinder for businesses. Yeah. So we went and found each other there. And from that started an email conversation and realized we had very similar visions. And we were talking about masterminds and all sorts of stuff. And then ended up coming about to, you know what? I'm going to do a podcast. Oh, so do I.
Right? So. That's like how it happened. That's how Megan and I met, was on the internet. I was trolling the internet for hours every day looking for podcast guests. She was trolling the internet every day looking for bloggers in Chicago with the right aesthetic and the right number of followers to build up her photography portfolio. And so there are 1,000 ways that we would just never have met. Just never. It never would have happened. And I hate more than anything that how much luck that needed for us to meet. Maybe you don't believe in coincidences. Maybe you do, but like there are so many situations where we just don't meet each other and this never happens. And so I think a lot of our goal with Flock has been give people this directory that's searchable and it's curated and give people the opportunity to find exactly who they need. And then the other half of that is we offer suggestions. So Megan, technical unicorn that she is, has built literally an algorithm that can match people with like suggestions for connecting or suggestions for collaborating, because we want to take luck out of relationships when you're building a business, because this is hard and you should have people that you feel like you connect with and you shouldn't feel alone. And if you want to, like you have an idea for a killer project, you shouldn't need to only pick from a pool of people who either happen to see your post in a Facebook group or happen to show up at a networking event that you go to and happen to live in your city. You shouldn't be limited that way. You shouldn't be limited by that. And you shouldn't have to rely on luck to build a thing that will support you and your family. So most of, like, that's kind of like our guiding thing is like, how do we just make it easier, more efficient, and less lucky that the right people find each other? And if we do that, then we already won.
I've been enjoying looking at the back end of it.
Thank you.
The Think Creative Collective.
Yeah.
So I totally have to go fix my pictures.
But that's totally fine. Yep.
But I love the idea, and I'm so excited to watch it unfold.
Thank you.
For me, when I started in Orange County, because that's where I lived, and there were a lot of moms starting businesses or small business owners. I could connect with people. And then I moved to the Inland Empire, where I felt like everybody was like a Jamberry or, It Works or something like that. And I'm like, it's nothing against them, but it's not the same when you're building your own concept to when you're selling something that a parent company has made. And I craved being able to connect with people that had businesses like mine, but I didn't know where they were and I couldn't find them and there weren't groups and they weren't as readily available to me. I've since found about a handful of them, but again, it's only a handful and I live in this gigantic county that I still can't find people.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's totally true.
I think it's fantastic. I can't wait to watch it fill up and for me to be able to connect with all those amazing people.
I can't wait either. I'm excited. Every day it's a little new because we're in such a fun stage. Like, we're a team of two people building a thing that normally takes more than two people. So literally the people who are in using it are so critical to us. And every time they give us feedback, something changes. It's not useless feedback. The thing that exists now, and we call it Flock, is completely different than the thing that existed before we had feedback and we called it Flock. It's like, I think of it more as like a giant group project than something that we do by ourselves. And that's been, the most fun part of it is seeing it come together, like from all these different ideas from different people. And selfishly, not feeling so alone, because this time last year, and even more like a year and a half ago, you start to feel like you're like, I don't know anybody. Like, we were in a city where like some of our friends had moved from law school, but you don't see them all the time. Plus, it was winter in Chicago and people hibernate and it's awful. But it's just like, I don't have anybody here. Like, I'm by myself and it sucks. And like, I love my fiance and we can hang out and luckily not want to kill each other all the time. But you like want other people in your life. And I didn't feel like I had it. And it was so deflating to realize like, I don't have anyone. Like, oh, wait a minute. There's nobody here. And of course they were there. I just didn't know where to look. So hopefully this fixes that for people. Cause if we could stop other people from having to go through that, that would be the best thing ever.
Oh my gosh. You are speaking right to my heart. About a year, year and a half ago for me. That was one of the things I said. I said, the hardest thing for me about being an entrepreneur, especially being the extrovert that feeds off of the energy of being around other people, is that you feel so alone. You're in your home office and you see the same place all day long, unless you go to a coffee shop, which I've got kids, so I rarely get to go to the coffee shop.
You don't want to feed them caffeine? I don't know.
More like I don't want to chase them around the coffee shop. They don't need to.
What? That's not a good idea? I don't understand.
But it was literally having that, you go from working in an office, which sure, you're not doing the work that you love, but you have people you get to talk to every day. You get to go to lunch with coworkers, you can walk by a cubicle and just have a chat for a little bit, things of this nature that you had in an office setting, there was still that group community aspect to it. And you lose that when you start your own business, unless by some miracle you have a partner or it's a group of you that started a company, you lose that aspect.
Yeah. If you're not real careful.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that has always driven me is I have that deep desire for community. And so I go seeking it. So I love that Flock has that at the heart of it, is to help you in building that community and getting connected to people.
For sure.
Now, you've mentioned this a little bit. You talked about how the last year was difficult. You also talked about making the switch from lawyer to creative world was very difficult. I want to know, how did you deal with the times where you had that negative self-talk about yourself? How did you get yourself out of it and get back to that positive vibe?
How did I handle it? Not very well. Certainly not very gracefully. I know that everyone has it, but I have a very, very healthy serving of imposter syndrome living within me. It's easy for me to get down and be like, you're stupid. Nothing you do is good. No ideas you have are good. Everyone thinks you're an idiot, and like nothing you do is ever going to be worth anything. Congratulations. You're great. So it's very easy for me to like go into kind of that place. And when something goes wrong, to like assume it's just all of me. Like I am the 100% reason why something goes wrong. But I think that especially not being like, especially that 6 months of having to figure out, like, I'm applying to jobs I don't want to make other people happy. I am trying to be a lawyer because I don't want other people to think I'm a quitter. And eventually you just have to say, screw it. Like, I can't care. Like, you have to get to a point where you just don't have it in you to care what anyone, no matter how much you love them, thinks about what you're doing, because I hated it. Like, I wasn't going to be happy. And they didn't have to show up every day and do it. I did. So I think, especially for like an only child from a small town, like I had that thing of like, I wanted to make everyone happy. I don't necessarily buy into like being happy is everything, because I think even Flock is a job to me now. Like being on it, social media is a job to me now. Like even fun things can become jobs, and that's fine. Like I don't necessarily buy into this thing like everything in your life has to be your bliss or you're doing it wrong. Like I don't know about all that. But I did have to figure out that there wasn't anything anyone else could do for me, and that when I knew on the inside what was best for me, I had to be a big kid and act on that and not ignore it because it was hard or because it might upset people or because I was going to let someone down, but because I was the only one who actually knew what was best for me. And look at all the, like, look at everything that was happening when I didn't act on it. Not like anything got any better. Things didn't get better until I acted like an adult and did the thing that I knew I had to do. I just didn't want to because it was hard. Like, I'm still not great at that. It's still something like I struggle to do, but I think that's like getting through it was just knowing that like the only way this gets better is when you do the thing that's hard. So like you can wait and not do it and keep trying to see how this is going, which is crap, or you can kind of suck it up and get it over with. And sucking it up and getting it over with has always led to like getting to a better place than just kind of treading water and hoping it gets better on its own. So kind of taking that active role, and I keep saying being a grown up, because at 28, I'm like, I still have goldfish for lunch sometimes. So I feel like a little bit of a fraud when I'm sitting here being like, hey, everyone, be a grown up. Like, it feels a little bit fake to me, but it's something that we also value a lot in Flock, is being active in things that happen to you versus being passive. And what I mean by that is like, we love Facebook groups. You're not going to hear me say mean things about a Facebook group ever, because I love Facebook groups and I love Instagram. And I love connecting with people that way. But it's also a place to get really sucked into feeling like you're doing things when you're not. So like, if you have a really good idea for like a blog series you want to do, and you post that idea in your favorite Facebook group, and you say, okay, like if you're interested, let me know. One, who responds to that depends on who Facebook lets respond to that. And second of all, like you're not actively, like sure, you put an idea out into the universe, but you're not being an active participant in who you find. Like you're not actively participating in finding the right people. You're just kind of like floating that idea out there and hoping something good comes from it. So that's not being like, I love the conversations we find in Facebook groups, and I love how you can connect with people that way, but I don't feel like it's a super active role in like making business relationships and partnerships and executing on ideas. So what we want Flock to be, like, by contrast, and kind of, it's complementary. It's, I don't think it's conflicting, and I don't think they're in competition. I think it's a complement to communities like that, where it's conversation and kind of a more casual connection. Then something like Flock lets you be an active participant in who you want to find. So like, what criteria are you looking for? Who are you looking for? What do they do? Who do they serve? Being able to pick those things and having to think about them, and not just being able to say, oh, anyone's fine. No, you have to think about who you want, and you have to actively put it out there, and you have to actively pursue people to fill those roles. I think that's a better balance than just kind of hoping that it works and hoping the right person sees it. I guess it kind of comes back to that luck thing again, but we want to encourage like being active in what you're trying to do and not just hoping it happens.
It sounds like you want the intention to be there, not just, you know, be intentional in what you're doing and the steps you're taking. Don't just, you know, sprinkle confetti.
Sprinkle stardust everywhere and hope.
And hope. Yeah. Don't just toss it out.
Yeah.
And I think that's fabulous. I'm curious in all of this, who have been some of your biggest influencers?
I think on like a broad level and not like as a cop out, because I'll be more specific, but on a very broad level, like I said, every woman we meet who's doing something like unique and trying to do something different is like a huge motivator for me. And I feel like I look up to everyone who's one of our members. I'm like, this is like a chicken and egg thing. Like I so admire all the things these people are trying to do. But beyond that, I think it's people who have taken the time to like support us business-wise when we didn't know what we're doing. So people like Melissa Jones, who runs Creative Chicks, which is actually a networking group where Megan and I talked about Flock for the first time. She had been like overly giving of her time and her energy and her knowledge of business with us, just like from the goodness of her heart. Like, so just meeting people like that who are so willing to give without expecting anything is fantastic. Abigail and Emily from Think Creative Collective are another two people like that who are like our internet friends who like never hesitate. Like if we need something, they're like, yes, done. Like, where do we sign? Like, yes, tell us what you need. Megan is a huge person that I looked up. Like I could not do this if it was not like, if I had tried to do this alone and if she had tried to do this alone, they would look completely different. Hers would be better. like learning. And also it's been a huge learning experience because we knew each other. We met like twice, 2-3 times in person before we started working together. And so like I look up to her tremendously, not just because of like what she can do, but like of this thing that we have built as two strangers. Like I don't think you can do that with just anyone. And not even really business wise, but honestly, this is like a funny answer that I kind of hate giving because I shouldn't hate giving it. No, shut up. I shouldn't hate giving it because I feel like I'm being that girl when I say it. But honestly, my fiance calls me on my imposter syndrome more than like anybody in the world. Like whenever I'm being just flat out a little bit stupid and like thinking we can't do it, like they had an imposter syndrome conference or talk at some lunch thing at his work. And he was like, I'm thinking about making you come. Like you should have had to be at my work today. You should have had to be here because this should be like mandatory listening for you. But yeah, I've been really lucky just to have these people in my life who like, even when we don't totally know what's coming next, have just been unfailingly supportive. Like, I don't know what I can do, but tell me, like, if you figure out what I can do for you, tell me. And that's been like, you feel like you don't deserve it. You're like, I don't know what I did to deserve you, but I'm so glad you're here. Cause I don't know what I would do otherwise.
I feel like your story is so refreshing and talking about your imposter syndrome, because for somebody like me, I'm the one who didn't finish college and went on, you know, I was like, this isn't for me. I'm going to go this path and took the creative path instead of finishing college. I was the black sheep of the family. And the way you talk about yourself and how you feel having left the profession you went to school for is the same way I talk about myself for having left college to pursue my creative. So even though we ultimately both pursued the creative avenue and building our own business, we had two different beginnings to it, and we still talk about ourselves the same, and we still feel the same imposter, because for me, the imposter syndrome comes in of, I didn't finish college, so who am I to talk about this stuff?
Right?
But or you like, finished college.
I finished too much.
Law school and the bar.
Oh, I hate that. I literally hate our formal education system and like the push for it. I hate it. And that's a rant for another time. I'm not, because I very easily go like a little bit nuts about that. But I hate that people are, one, either they feel pushed and they don't need college. Like you don't need it to be successful. I don't think that you need absolutely 100% no matter what to have a college degree. I just don't think it's a thing. And then most of our higher education is just a giant scam. And I hate both of those things. But I also, it's all comes down to like expectations. Like it's an expectation one way or the other, and it just doesn't fit, but you're trying to fit yourself into it anyway, even like no matter what side of that spectrum you're on. So yeah, it's everybody feels that way. That's what's been so much fun. Like the more people you talk to and the more people you realize feel the exact same way, you're like, oh, okay.
Exactly. And that's why I think that the idea of Flock and the idea of connecting in community really help people get past a lot of these insecurities or negative self-talk or imposter syndrome feelings. Because when you start to realize you're not the only one, you start to be able to dispel them a lot more and say, these just aren't true.
Yeah, they're just not real life.
I don't have to feel this way. I'm gonna not feel this way anymore.
Yes.
So I love that. And I can definitely hear from everything that you said about what you do and your passion and what Flock is about is that community is a huge value to you. What other values are you bringing into Flock?
This is a good one because we're working on right now our like code of conduct, which sounds super formal, which is basically just like house rules for being in flow. And so like community is huge to us, but also just be nice to people. And you can edit this out, what I'm about to say, if you need to, because I'm not sure where this podcast falls on the explicit scale in iTunes. But our first rule, and the only way we have been able to word it that is like exactly what we mean, is don't be a dick. Don't do it. Like, we've had recently a couple of people reach out to us in a way that was super rude, super unprofessional, and it's fine to be frustrated. And like, one of the things, there's plenty of things that I take away from law that I am grateful for. And one of them is like, don't take it personally. One, don't take short emails personally. Like, everyone sounds awful in an email if you're not actively trying not to sound like a jerk in an email. Everyone does. And then don't take things personally. It's usually about something that's not, has nothing to do with you. If someone's being crappy to you, it has nothing to do with you normally. And so like, trying to balance that when we get these kind of responses with like, okay, I don't want to take it personally. I get that you're frustrated. I want to handle the, like, I want to make you feel heard for that frustration. But also, if you talk to someone in flock, like a little bit, like, I'm a little bit like protective, a little bit like, no, no, no. Like, if you talk to one of our members that way, you're done. That's not going to be a thing. That this is going to be a space. We are not going to let it not be a space where people feel like safe to come. Like, one, I don't want you to show up and have like 1,000 spammy LinkedIn messages in your inbox. Like, I don't want you to feel spammed, and I don't want you to feel like attacked. And so when people talk to us like that, it kind of became clear that this be nice to everyone thing also applied to us. It's like, oh wait, if we wouldn't let you talk to our members that way, we're also not going to let you talk to us that way. It's just not a thing. So one of our rapidly evolving values is like, come in, be a community, find the right people, and be nice to each other. And if you're not doing that, you don't have a place here. There are too many people that we want to work with that like, if your attitude is, I don't want it, I don't need it, no thanks, not a thing. So be nice to people, that kind of community, and come in with an expect, like on that aspect of community building, I think our other value is like, come in wanting to give more than you get out of it. Like, come in wanting to be active, come in wanting to see like how you can serve other people. And that's when good things happen. Like, better things happen, at least for me, in all these projects that I work on, when I go in trying to help someone else and then somehow like something good comes out of it. That's fine. But like, when I go in needing something for myself, usually doesn't work out. So having that attitude of like, not just what can I get from this, but like, how can I go actively participate in it, make it better, is something that's, it doesn't work without that kind of attitude.
I feel like that's a running theme among especially those who are about like, you know, community over competition.
Yeah.
And the groups that really are growing and building more rapidly. And this was something that was even brought up at Savvy.
Yeah.
Which was give, give, then get. Like, you have to give first and then you can get. And I hear it over and over again in life, even not just in business. And I mean, it makes me always think about Christmas when you hear it, 'tis better to give than receive. And Christmas is my favorite holiday. So it always ties back. I always think of Christmas. Think of Christmas. Isn't it so much fun to give a present, watch somebody open it, than to get a present? Like, where's the joy? So give, give. But I also like to think of it the same way that my managers used to tell us at Apple. Was they would say, if you want to give constructive criticism to somebody, you have to make sure that you've invested in that person first. You have to deposit into the bank before you can take out and withdraw. And the constructive criticism is a withdrawal. So make sure that you've built that relationship, you've built that rapport, where when you give that constructive criticism, it's going to be received properly. And it's the same way of when you go into a group setting or a community in a business, make sure you've deposited first before you ask for anything, because you can't take out what you haven't put in.
Yeah. I love that.
You're just in the negative.
That's such good advice. And like, don't cut what my other pet peeve is, like when you come with constructive criticism with it, which is real fine line between constructive criticism and like sneaky being a jerk. I feel like if there's any frustration there, like be real careful how you word things. That's like the lawyer in me. But also like, don't give, it's not constructive criticism unless you're offering a way to fix it. If you're just saying like, no matter how constructively you phrase it, your thing sucks, it can't be constructive because you're not telling them how it can get better. You, like, that's not feedback. That's nicely worded, not being very nice.
Well, it's always nice to sandwich things. Ilya said this.
The compliment sandwich.
Yeah, the compliment sandwich. The constructive criticism is meat in the middle. But make sure you give them something like, you did this great. This needs to be fixed. Oh, and this over here, that was good too. Or this is how you can fix it. Make sure that it's not just, you did this crappy. You know, there's got to be something to soften the blow. And constructive criticism, as you said, has to include some sort of solution or ideas. Yes. Or, you know, something more than it sucks.
Where's like the preach emoji? I'm just over here like preach emojing at you. Yes. That.
So what, I think we've given lots of advice in this particular episode. What would be your key pieces of advice for entrepreneurs just starting out?
Kind of my go-to, just like overall, you don't just get to fail once. You get to fail as many times as you want to keep going. And like when you're done with something, you're not a quitter, you're just done with something. Something that I just constantly worried about for a long time was, I'm a quitter and there's nothing worse that you can be than a quitter. It's not true. And like I went from law to being a wedding planner, to being in real estate, to being in a podcast, now to being like a tech co-founder. And I don't feel like I've quit on necessarily all of those things. I just think that I changed. And I think there's a difference between quitting or not seeing something through or any of those things and failing as being like the end, and it's not. And so I just think that it's really important to kind of reframe how you think about it, because I couldn't keep thinking about it as a failure. Like from the very beginning, like not being a lawyer, I couldn't keep thinking of that as being a failure. I was never going to get over it. And I see that all the time. So I think that's my, like, fast forward to the end of this, too long, didn't listen. Like if all you get out of it is this, is just don't think that you're a quitter, and don't think that you can, like, once you fail, that that's like your get out of jail free card and you spent it. Like you can keep going and that's fine. And I don't like, sometimes I get worried because you hear those things where people are like, I had 5 failed businesses before I started one that worked. And I'm like, crap, I'm on one. Like, does this mean that this and 4 more have to fail before we get to the good stuff? Like, oh no. But yeah, I think that would be my one Yoda wisdom I would like to leave here. I'm trying to think how to say it in Yoda speak, and I don't think I'm going to do it without screwing it up. So I'm not going to try.
Oh, for the blooper reel, please. Oh, yeah. Try.
fail more than once, you can.
That's awesome. Yes. That worked.
Done. That we have a Yoda costume somewhere in this house.
I should title. Okay, I forgot to ask you before but we always like to make a fun, you're a new addition to the crayon box. What color would you be? What would you name it and why?
See, and I loved Emily's answer to this one, because gray is also like my favorite color. And I too was in search of that perfect gray when we bought our house, and I painted my walls, and I don't think I nailed it, because I'm like, sometimes I look at this gray and I'm like, no, you're not it. But I'm either literally in all like gray and like denim and like no color whatsoever, or I am in only neon. So I would be like the neoniest of all the neon crayons. I don't even know what you would name this crayon, because it has to be brighter than the neon that is already there. Just fluorescent freaking yellow crayon. Maybe that's it. My crayon name is fluorescent freaking yellow. I would paint our house neon if I could. Like if people ask me, what's your favorite color? Neon or gold? Maybe like a neon gold swirl crayon.
Ooh.
That's very subdued, very classy, obviously.
Subdued and neon. I think that's an oxymoron.
It is. It is. Yeah. It is not in the classy crayons. No, it's got a box all of its own.
And sorry, seeing a neon yellow and a gold swirl.
Yes.
Makes me think it's going to come out when you go to color looking like baby diarrhea.
Yes, I was just going to say it's going to look like baby poop, but it'll be like mildly shiny baby poop. So maybe that'll be redeeming. And also it'll glow in the dark. So I feel like there's not really a way to lose here.
Oh my gosh, that is awesome. Yeah? That's seriously one of the best answers.
Makers out there, who's making me this crayon? Who's making this crayon? Form an orderly line.
It needs to be even like a textured background, like that glittery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't.
Gold swirl.
Yeah, you can't use this crayon on like computer paper. That won't work. It's going to need to be so much fancier than that. This reminds me of the first time. This is a story I have to tell because you brought up crayons and it's hilarious and I laugh every time I think of it. The first, when they came out with like grown-up coloring books, I was like, I need one in every model you make. Like one of each, please. Amazon, send them to me. And I told my fiance that I was ordering an adult coloring book. And if you're not, I guess, in a lot of Facebook groups where people are stoked about their grown-up coloring books, you hear adult coloring book and you think it's like a porn coloring book. And so yeah, he's like, I'm sorry, what did you order?
Oh my gosh.
So I'll just be over here coloring in my adult coloring book with my colored crayon. Wow, this got weird quick. I'm sorry.
No, as soon as you said it, I was like, oh gosh,
he thought something totally different.
Totally different. Because that's my husband. My husband would go there.
Right? Like, I'm sure they exist. They must. Everything else exists. Squatty potties exist. Have you seen the Facebook ad for the squatty potty with the
unicorn?
The unicorn. The most brilliant thing I've ever seen. It's like I want to throw up and also I can't stop watching it.
But it makes you want a squatty potty, right?
It's genius. Like, whoever came up with that, they better have gotten like a raise, a promotion, and a pony because that's just the smartest thing I've ever seen.
It needs to ship though with the rainbow unicorn. It needs to ship with one. I want, it could be just a plush.
Like a little, like a beanie baby.
I want my unicorn.
I want the ice cream. I don't know about you.
Well, I like the ice cream, but I don't know if I want that ice cream.
And the little kid, the little kids at the end are all eating it. I'm like, oh my God. All right.
What all the listeners can't see is that I'm practically crying.
I'm crying. It's fine.
So, to wrap it up, for those of you listening, for show notes and more information about the episode, go ahead and join us over at beautifullyboldpodcast.com. And to continue the conversation, come on over to the Beautifully Bold in Business Facebook group. You can find us there by going to beautifullyboldpodcast.com/Facebook. Thanks so much for joining us, Samantha.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Let's get you leading beautifully and boldly in your life and business. Head on over to beautifullyboldpodcast.com for more information about this episode, show notes, and resources on how to be beautifully bold in your business. There you can also learn more about the two beautiful women behind the movement. If you liked what you heard today, then head on over to iTunes and leave Nicole and Samantha a review. It's the little things that can have a huge impact, and your review would mean so much to them. This music is provided by bensound.com.